Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening in on DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talk back show where I get to speak to funny people around Australia regionally and internationally lately as well. So today I've got Ali Butler in and she's from Bruce Rock. How are you, Ali?
I'm very well, thanks.
It's great that Ali's actually coming to the studio today, which is amazing. Otherwise we'd be doing this via Skype. So Thank you for coming in.
Did the big trek.
I know, it's a big drive, isn't it?
You know, it's not that bad. 2.5 to 3, depending how fast you go.
Yeah. But that's pretty long. And it's a very hot day today in Perth as well, isn't it?
It is.
Mm. Ali, can you please tell us a bit about your background? Like, how did you actually start in comedy?
Comedy, I reckon I started in about year 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, early. And I say that, when I say that, I mean like my best friend at school at the time, all the boys were asking her out. They'd actually come up to me and say, do you think she'll go out with me? And I think I had a day when about 6 of them did that. And I, you know, she had the thing going on. I was a very gawky teenager, braces and pimples and, you know.
I think we were the same person.
Ah, yeah. I was one of those teenagers. And so I was like, how am I going to get the boys' attention? And then I was like, that's it. I'll make them laugh. And I reckon I started working on my craft then.
Wow.
Yeah. But nobody really – I needed an older person actually to say, you know what, making the boys laugh still doesn't really get you the guys. But anyway, I think that's – I made a conscious decision. So I just started making jokes and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think that was part of learning the funny side of things. But then I didn't actually start comedy, like stand-up comedy till – oh, could have been 30.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because what happened, I became a nurse. That's what I did when I finished school. And then at 27, I went to Sydney because I got into a drama school because I actually always wanted to be an actor. And when I became a nurse, as you do. And so then when I got out of drama school, I was like, what can I do, you know, rather than waiting for all the Hollywood phone calls to come my way? Yeah. What can I do to create my own work? And I thought, well, like I'm a nurse, I can sing, I can act, I do – like I'm – well, I thought I was funny. I thought I'm going to create a character and I created this naughty – English nurse, and I'd never really been great at accents, but I just spoke like that and was like a kind of an Essex kind of girl, you know, and I wore a very short dress. And so I had this cabaret character, and she was called Portable 2, named after I worked at the Sydney Opera House as a nurse. And when we got called on the radio to go to a medical, because I did that all through acting school as my part-time job, and when you get called to a medical, they'd be like, Portable 2, will you go to wherever? So then I decided to call my character Portable 2. And so I was doing this cabaret comedy sort of character, and then at one point I was like, you know, I think there's more venues like with stand-up than cabaret. So I just sort of started morphing my material to stand-up. I think I'm sure if I stuck with that character she'd be a raging success, but I just I left that, and that's kind of what I've done a little bit. I've sort of you know, I'll do singing for a bit and then I'm like, no, I think it's comedy, and then I'll do that for a bit and then I'll be like, no. So with comedy I was like, right, you've just got to stick at something. Like, stop changing direction. So anyway, that's kind of how I got to comedy.
Yeah. Did you hit many of the comedy scene or places in Sydney then?
Yeah, I managed to get on the – God, my brain. What's the big main one called?
Oh.
The comedy store.
Yes.
I have graced that stage. Obviously, that's a while ago now because I can't even remember what the place is called.
I used to go to one in at Fox Studios. Yeah, is that
comedy
that one?
Store.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I couldn't even remember. Yeah. I lived there as well. So.
I know. Yeah. Since I had a baby, my brain just got wired.
It's stuffed.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah, 3 times over for me.
Does it get worse every time?
Yeah, and it never comes back.
I know. I have just massive blanks. Like when I went back to work at the Opera House as a nurse, I remember walking into the stage door, the foyer, and was like, hi, And I had to look at his name badge. 'Cause his name and just like this is a guy that I'd see every day.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, and different places around Sydney, like different comedy venues. So yeah, I did. That's where I learnt comedy in Sydney. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Basically, where I learnt my craft over there.
And what brought you to Perth then?
Well, I'm originally from WA. Like, I am originally from Bruce Rock. And
yep.
it was the year 99 boys at Bruce Rock I was trying to impress. Crazy as that sounds. So, anyway, my family is still there. And I just wanted to come back and hang with my family for a bit. So, I was just going to come back for 3 to 6 months. And it's nearly been 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought I'd get up to Perth and do heaps of gigs, but 3 hours is actually a long way away. And
it is, yeah.
Especially if you have a kid, yeah. You know.
That's a whole day. You may as well stay overnight, isn't it?
Yeah, so. And then you got to find somewhere to stay overnight. And, yeah, so I didn't end up getting down as much as I wanted to, which is why I sort of created a fringe show. So I had, you know, a show that I could tour and take regionally and stuff.
I think that's how we met you last year, was because you had your fringe show, because you did
30-year-old pop star.
And it was a great show. But I'm, yeah, because we
where
had you.
Where do we actually?
At Fringe.
Had you seen me though?
Yeah.
Or you hadn't?
No.
Oh, you guys
no.
do a punt.
Yeah, but love we it. Loved the everything. Like when you pitched it to us, it was great, and we thought it was such a good fit for our venue. So, yeah.
Oh, Kalamunda was awesome. It was one of my favorite venues.
Yeah,
like, the crowd was so like yes. This is when it's so much fun.
Yeah, and it was good because it was not just comedy that you were doing. You were doing songs and music, and it was just amazing. Just hearing your vocals as well. So yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with that show. Because I have done, like I'm a singer-songwriter and a comedian, I'd always feel like I was just doing one or the other. And I'd feel like if I was doing singer-songwriting, I'd feel like that funny side of me, I would miss being able to express that.
Yeah.
And then if I was just doing comedy, like just focusing on that, I'd miss the music. So that's – I just thought, why don't I do a show where I put them together? So it strangely worked.
Yeah, really well actually.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I was just going back in my head, I was saying, you know, last year, but it was actually this year, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I'm the same. We always think, oh, Fringe last year, but it was this year.
It's because of COVID. It kind of threw us a little bit. But then you actually did our final show before COVID as well, because that was the
International Women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you were headlining for us. That night, so
which was heaps of fun.
Oh, that was great fun, yeah. I just kind of, I'm spinning out that was all
I know at the beginning of this year,
yeah.
It's nuts,
yeah. And then now we're at Christmas,
I know. And like another Fringe world is just about to take off,
yeah. It is, yeah, nearly there. So, is there something that you aim to express in your comedy?
I aim to express, my deep love for hats. No, I don't know. I was just looking at my hat. My hat on the floor. I think I feel like I'm just that kid in the classroom who doesn't want to listen to the teacher.
Mm.
And just whenever they lecture you or say something to you, you're like just whispering funny things to your friend next door to get yourself out of the mundaneness of the situation that you're in. So
yep.
I feel like in some ways that's where my comedy is. It's like the side comment all the time to the thing that's been spouted at you.
Yeah.
But what am I trying to express? I guess I talk about different things. Like I talk about being a nurse, and I guess it's going against the expectations of what people think. So I tell lots of stories about the uncaring nurse that perhaps I really am, you know, when nurses are supposed to be caring, but I don't like the job, you know. And then I talk about, I have a bit of stuff about, I guess, you know, what it's like to be a woman in this world and how we're supposed to get rid of all our hair and be these preened beings and just, you know, stuff that kind of I think, I don't know if I – when I just think things are being manipulated, I like to just little like just say, but do you think this is what's going on, guys? Let's just have a think about it and laugh at the same time.
Yeah.
Laugh about, you know, things that you don't want to preach to people because no one ever wants to listen to that. But if you can make them laugh and think at the same time,
yeah,
you know, and then some of it's not anything to think about. Like, so I guess it's a bit of a mix.
Yeah. Hey, thinking about nursing, right?
Yeah.
When I hang around some police, firefighters as well, and do know some nurses, but you know that dark humour that comes into it, and I guess that's a bit of a coping mechanism as well.
Yeah.
Your actual comedy humour is different to that. So how did you – were you,
oh, what do you mean?
Like, you know, there's more of that dark humour, you know, situational humour, I guess, and you've got to have a laugh at it because some it's quite intense, isn't it, on the job when
yes,
you're in
yeah
in those yeah. So you know there might be something that's probably inappropriate, but you've got to have a bit of a laugh. And you know, I tend to do that when I'm in surgery. I start pulling the piss out of everything and anything.
Oh, I laugh at funerals, which is terrible.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it's the emotion.
Yeah,
like, you know, they say crying and laughing, they're so
It can be an anxiety state emotion, as well, can't it?
Yeah, just different ends of the spectrum, but they're the same. And so at funerals I can just go from crying to laughing very easily.
Yeah.
But it's just hysteria, really.
Yeah.
At either end of the spectrum.
Yeah. So, but I was, yeah, the point I was trying to make there was your humour actually as a comedian is not dark humour, is it? So, yeah, it's
probably
it's
why
light
I don't like being a nurse. it's hard to judge what your own humour is, but light. I think it's trying to. I don't know.
There is a message in your humour.
Yeah, well,
as well.
What you yeah. tell me. Like, it's hard to watch yourself, isn't it? What do you think? And then I can respond to that.
Well, I think, I like. Well, you were talking about, you know, hairless before and stuff like that. You pose a question out there to people, but you kind of go, you know, it's all right to be whatever you want to be. And that's kind of – that's what I take away from you. So
yeah, oh, that's good. Because I do think, like, in the world today, everyone's scared of – a bit like the conversation we're having before. Like, you know, it's like everyone's just allowed to do what they want and that's fine, but let's not have an opinion about anything then lest we offend someone. And I don't want to go out and offend people, but I still think you should be able to say your truth as long as it's not, misogynistic or racist or, like, that's not, you know, some people may claim that's their truth. Maybe it is for them, but that's not what I mean. I just mean I think, you know, let's not shut people's thought processes down.
Yeah. Yeah, you can have meaningful conversations which matter and increase awareness, can't we?
And you don't have to change people's minds. Like, just because I think this, you don't have to think that, but let's just
absolutely
pose scenarios and go, oh, could I think about this a different way? Or go, oh, yeah, I probably am doing this behaviour because of the cultural environment that I was brought up in, but that's okay, I'm choosing to do that.
Yeah. You can lovingly listen to people, take on board their differences in opinions, and then walk away from it better rather than arguing and being negative about it.
I think that's what I had this amazing conversation with someone a while ago, and it was quite heated in that it was a subject that people get very passionate about, but we were very respectful, I think, just of listening and talking. And I think we both walked away going, well, that was full on. But because each of us were open, I don't know. I think you can – it gives you space to go, do you know what, I don't have to hold on to this belief that I had. I actually could change my belief to something else and that's okay.
Yeah, and being challenged in that thought, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Ali, who is an influence or influences in your life in general or in comedy as well?
my husband's definitely an influence in my life. I was just saying to him yesterday, I think it's so weird that we pick someone in the world that I'm just going to hang out with you for the rest of my life. Like, yeah. What an odd thing to do, don't you reckon? I know lots of people don't. They go, I'm going to do that, and then they don't. And who knows?
Yeah, I didn't. I'm divorced. So.
Exactly. Who knows? You know, I said I would get married to him because I knew if I wanted to, I could get divorced because I was such a commitment phobe. The only way I can get married is if I know that I can leave, because I hated that feeling of being trapped.
Yeah.
So I was like, as long as I know I'm not trapped here and I can leave, I'll marry you, which sounds totally like it doesn't make sense, but I think, you know, you want to leave when you know you can't.
Mm.
If you know you can leave, it's a choice to stay. When
yeah, it's different.
When the going gets tough, you know. Yeah. So, and he's a writer and very creative. So we have a very creative, banterful life. You know, I'm definitely hanging out with someone that I bounce off with ideas in comedy and all sorts of things. So he would be probably one of my biggest influences, comedy-wise. I think because I'm not someone that was like, yeah, I used to watch all this comedy as a kid. I don't even know if I knew stand-up comedy existed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But obviously I'm a fan of Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
I just like that she challenges – I think what we were just talking about, just being a woman and just saying, here I am and this is what I think. And I think it's really fascinating. I often read the comments on Facebook and just can't believe how much people get riled up by her. I think she's not – like, she's just speaking logic to me a lot of the time. And – yeah, I'm fascinated. I often read the comments just to get an insight to what people think about, you know, like their reactions. And I'm just gobsmacked at how people get annoyed and also how misogynistic, like, so many of the comments are towards her. And I think, wow, why?
Yeah.
I just think it's crazy.
I liken it to, you know, the road rage drivers. You wouldn't in person necessarily speak or behave in that manner to anyone, but then behind a keyboard where people can't see, but then, and also behind the wheel of a car, I don't know, something crazy happens to some people.
Yeah, and the keyboard warriors or whatever. And I really appreciate her because, you know, I've always been a people pleaser. Like, I don't like hopping online really because I can't be – I don't want to read anything bad about myself, and I don't – I'm more likely to say controversial stuff or not – or challenging stuff on stage, on set, because I feel like I'm there and I can gauge the person's response in front of me, whereas the whole throwing a lot of stuff out online – that whole concept exhausts me.
Yeah.
I get very mentally exhausted by that. But anyway, I just admire anybody that, you know, puts themselves out there and says what they want regardless of all the idiots out in the world. But influences, well, you know, I guess just your upbringing, country upbringing,
yeah,
family in the country has been a massive thing that's molded me.
Yeah. Why do you feel like that?
I think growing up on land, like I grew up on a farm and space, and yeah, I think just it was really interesting leaving Sydney and coming back to Bruce Rock, and yeah, what people talk about is different and, like, it's not better or worse, but – and it seems a bit simpler out there. Not saying people are simpler. It's just – it almost feels like the internet doesn't get out there, which is weird, like, because it does.
Mm.
But people aren't as consumed by, you know, the culture of – you know, you should be doing this or you should be doing that.
That rat race mentality.
Yeah, because people just put, you know, your focus is putting some seed in the ground and then getting it out. It's very primal.
Yeah.
Sort of. And, yeah, there's something nice about having been brought up like that and knowing that you can always go back to it and I don't know.
And I guess you don't know what you don't know because, but having that different mentality and knowing you can go back to it, it's good for mental health as well, isn't it? Just escaping the rat race.
Well, I said to my husband the other day, I'm so glad I've been able to give my daughter, because, you know, she was born in Sydney and was there till she was five, and then she spent 3 years here. And they say the first 7 years of your life is what is your blueprint and what molds you. And, I'm glad I've been able to give her that country experience. Just it's very different to the city experience. And kids have so much freedom. Like if I go and play hockey on a Saturday, the kids just run around the oval and you don't see them all day. And when I first moved back, I was like, what do you mean I can just leave her in the playground and walk away? So, I guess I had that childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And though I actually love that childhood because I grew up in Bayswater and I used to live, it was before everything was built up there. So there was all mud, there was heaps of bush and I love that. But I also love that we didn't come home until, you know, it was dark. It helped us to make decisions. And now I don't feel that, I can reflect on my own children. A lot of them are incapable of making decisions by themselves and I think they're so much more anxious because – you know, and they worry more because, you know, oh, mum and dad have to solve this problem for us. And when you're out and, you know, problem solving for yourself and even as a child problem solving, it helps you to get resilience and helps you to grow as an individual, doesn't it? So
yeah, I think being a nurse, bizarrely as well, helped me learn to problem solve because, to be honest, I'm a fairly indecisive person or I have been in the past. And nursing's a really practical job. Like you've got to go, right, this is happening. Okay, what are we going to do? We have to make a decision now.
Wow. Yeah.
If you don't, you know, it could cost somebody's life. Or
what sort of nurse were you?
I was going to say a very average one.
Sure you
were.
But
sometimes I was a really good nurse and sometimes I wasn't. I just did general. So I did my first year nursing in Kalgoorlie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Another regional town in WA.
I'd obviously studied in Perth and then wanted to get out of the country because I'd been here for so many years. And so I did my first year in Kalgoorlie and you'd do a grad program and you'd just do medical surgical rehab. Then I did emergency. And then the woman who ran emergency, she said, do you want to stay on and keep working here? And I was in her office and I said, look, thanks for the offer, but I'm going to be an actor.
And you knew then.
No, but just like the stupidity of it all, because even if I was, like, I did go and follow that, but I just thought, now that I've decided to be an actor, I'll probably be in Hollywood soon. So I'm back in Bruce Rock.
Ali, how old were you then, Bart?
21.
Oh, you
were
a baby. Yeah.
Yeah. And she just looked at me like the head of ED. Just like, okay, whack job. Off you go then.
But aren't you glad you followed that dream?
I am, but you know what? I do wish I'd stayed an extra a few months and maybe then I would have maybe qualified as an ED nurse or had the experience and then specialised, because as a nurse I did general nursing and I always did agency nursing ever since then.
Oh, yeah.
And so I kind of went everywhere, but I wanted to go overseas, you see, so I just was like, no, I'm not doing this. Whereas if I'd actually just waited a little bit longer, I could have got better skills, because obviously I nursed while I was still pursuing all my arts. It's not like I just went, okay, finish with nursing because now I have a flourishing arts career because I just decided. I mean, that probably happens for some people, but it didn't happen for me.
Yeah. Well, who knows? I don't know, but you're doing really good in what you're doing now. So.
Well, I mean, you know, you use all your life experience for your material.
Yeah, so yeah, true. That's very true.
I'd have no nursing material if I didn't do nursing. So.
Your creative process, Ali, you said that your husband's also a writer and quite creative as well. Like, I was going to ask you two questions. What is your creative process? But do you and him have a similar process and can you collaborate together?
Yeah, we definitely collaborate. Like I will write stuff and then say, can you have a look at this? And he can add stuff to it, or we'll banter together. I think because we have a very similar sense of humour.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might come up with better stuff just bantering over the stuff as well.
Yeah.
My creative process, it kind of varies. Like, I haven't actually written a lot of new material for ages, and I've just started again. Yeah, I go through these phases of like the 40-year-old pop star show was a whole lot of material I developed over quite a long period of time and just decided to mold that into a show. So I kind of just took all my bits and pieces and carved a narrative around it.
Yeah.
And that was just my creative process there. Like, I think I wrote quite a bit of it when my daughter was young, and yeah, that was just sort of like, oh, she's napping now, I'll quickly try and write some stuff, or that sort of thing. And then, you know, once you have stuff, it's going out to the rooms and just trying it and testing it. I think pre-kids, I found it so much easier to do that. You can go out any night of the week.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. Whereas once I had like a child, it kind of became like, oh, right, where do I fit that in? Mm. But I'm wanting to write a new show, and I've got an idea about the show. And so I've never actually sat down and gone, I'm going to write a show with this specific idea in mind and write for it. I haven't done that before. But so I'll just start writing, and then I've got, like, I record a lot of stuff on my phone if I just think of stuff, and I'll just do the voice memo thing.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can listen back.
And also talking, you can, you know, you'll get the vibe of what you're meaning. Sometimes when you're writing, the same flow of funniness is not there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest learning curve or bomb on stage?
I think my biggest bomb was when I was doing my naughty nurse character. Yep. And a friend of mine in Sydney was dating this guy, and he had to get a comedian or an act in for this corporate gig. It was like going to be my first corporate gig, and I can't remember his name. But anyway, I showed him a YouTube clip of the nurse.
Yeah.
Portable 2, the character. So he should have known that she has red knickers and bends over, you know? And but anyway, he's like, yep, book you in. And so then I did this gig, and Nicholas, my husband, was in the act, and I, because he is also a songwriter, and I was singing some of his cabaret songs.
Yeah.
And in the show, and he was Clive the Catatonic, and he would just come to life, like, he would just, you know, I hope I'm not offending any catatonics out there. I just don't know with what you're saying now. This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But he would just stand at the piano, and then when I say Clive, and then he would start playing, and then I would sing the song. Anyway, this song was called Strap of Leather. And strap of leather, strap of leather. And I had like a strap of leather.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was OPSM, you know, the...
Yeah, the glasses.
Yeah. It was for people, like, who were having, like, a work party or something. I'd written all of this, like, glasses material. And so I don't think they knew they were having an act, and they all had been out to dinner, I think, were a little bit drunk. Then they were herded back to this conference room that was, like, fluorescent light.
Oh, ouch, yeah.
No, like, so I think I had a stage, but there was no, like, lights out for them and lights on for me. It was all the same lighting in the whole room.
Yeah.
And then they weren't allowed any alcohol, so all been having, you know, a merry time, and then, okay, leave your drinks and come into this room.
Wow.
Yeah, and so anyway, and then I'm just this – I start with a big coat on and then do the big reveal. And I remember one person just looking at me going, why? Like, and then another person had managed to escape the room and there was glass behind me and they were just like banging on it. I felt like I was in this Steve Martin movie. And then the guy who had organised it, his boss was there and it wasn't going down well. And he'd put a note on my husband's piano saying, wrap it up. And then my husband like cut to the end and I was like, Clive, what are you doing? We haven't finished yet.
Oh,
and
no.
He couldn't communicate to me that it was like, get off stage.
Yeah.
And so I just went even crazier and like went around whipping tables with my strap of leather. It was complete. Like, you know when something's really bad, you just put into it more?
Yeah.
Anyway,
oh, my gosh.
I can't remember like how it all ended. I think I did the whole lot though, much to the guys, like the guy that, you know, employed me. It was just a disaster.
Oh.
And I remember, obviously, you can feel that as a performer. Mm. And I just felt like, oh, I didn't want to see anyone. I just wanted to try and slink off into the lift and yeah. hope that no one gave me any eye contact. So that was probably my worst. It was one of my best paid gigs.
Wow.
Because it was a corporate gig. But, yeah, I didn't understand why he got me there. It was the wrong fit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think it's interesting, actually. A lot of times when people are booking acts, yeah, they haven't thought through it, have they? Especially
yeah.
for that corporate sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I had another thing like that recently and I was just like, well, you should have asked what my show was about, maybe.
Mm. Well, I actually do question people and when they're explaining to me what the, you know, what it might be a birthday party and they're explaining they're going to do this and this and this and I'm like, you know, are you sure? Because your guests are going to want to talk together. Your guests are going to want to have that party time together and you're asking them to stop and watch a show. So I do question because I want the best for performers and audience, not just,
yeah.
you know, and it's a good idea sometimes, but other times I think you do need to stop and pause and go, well, is this really going to be a good fit? So you might have been a good fit at the beginning of the night rather than after
yeah.
they've already had dinner, they've already, you know.
Yeah, like we don't want to stop now. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's been interesting because I've done a few regional tours of my show, 40-year-old pop star, and yeah, I've just been finding out, yeah, maybe I'd, you sort of think, yeah, it's a comedy show, so people, I think as a, you know, in fringe people, or just comedy in the city, people are used to hearing almost anything on stage.
Yeah.
And yet I think perhaps in certain areas people have a really old school idea of comedy.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily fit that. And so I have recently been learning, right, I might have to just spell out what my comedy means because, you know, a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's all learning.
Yeah, it is. But it's also the person that's booking you, they should be asking the questions as well, shouldn't they?
Well, you would think. You would think.
But yeah, I would think.
Yeah. It's learning for everyone.
What has been your best moment as a performer then?
I think I had a great gig down at Busselton Fringe this year after I did it here, and there was one night where I think the audience was nicely lubricated. It was like late enough that they'd had their dinner and maybe a couple of wines, which I think always helps
yeah.
when you're a performer and they're just nice and loose and looking for a laugh. And they were just a really cool audience that were up for that interaction and banter, and you could just go off on tangents with whatever the audience sort of – they were up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think those bits, when you're secure enough in your show to leave sort of your main thread
yeah.
and go off on your tangents because it's unexpected for you as
yeah.
well. And, like, humour is – that's when it's funny, when it's unexpected. So when it's unexpected humour for yourself –
yeah.
You know, as comedians, we know what jokes we're coming up with. So you've got to make it as though it is the first time you've said it, yeah. even though it's not for yourself. But when you do find those jokes that are the first time you've said it because it just happens to come from some audience interaction, they're probably my favourite bits.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a good swing on the golf club, really, isn't it? Everything's just flowing right, and
yeah, do you, play you make golf? The hit.
No,
oh. I used to, but I know what you mean.
Yeah,
you just go, oh yeah, that's all I need to do. That's so easy. It's really hard to do again.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I've got some different questions for you now. So, what is the most funniest thing that's happened to you recently?
Funniest thing. These ones are hard. Funniest thing that's happened to me recently.
Or I can ask you another one.
Yeah, ask me another one. That might come.
Okay. All right. Sorry. I'll ask you, do you have any personal mantras?
Yeah, it's on my phone actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Share away. It just says just do the work.
Oh, wow, you do too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, because I think I spent a lot of time when I was younger, and I'm going to be teaching my daughter this. You know, I thought, oh, you get somewhere just because you're talented enough, or, you know, I didn't understand that, well, when I do this piece of work, it just puts me to the next level, to the next level. You're not just at the level you want to be. It's taken me such a long time to realise that it's like an apprenticeship. You're just not going to be at that place if you don't go through all of these steps.
Yeah.
And so rather than it being some, when's it just going to happen, you know, just do the work.
Just do the,
forget
I like
about
that.
The rest.
Yeah, it's all about, yeah, yeah, it is. You've got to apply yourself, don't you?
Yeah, well, if you just do the work, you'll get better anyway.
Very true. Can you share a thought that brings a smile to your face?
My daughter.
Oh, how old is your daughter?
7.
Oh, that's a beautiful age. Yeah. Between that 4 and 7, I think they're probably my most favourite ages. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm about to leave 7. So what am I in for?
8, growth. 8's still great. I don't think there's anything, you know, 8 to 10 is still great. It's just they're becoming more mature, and they're starting to, you know, develop a bit more. Girls are a bit different from boys.
Yeah,
so.
I have a stepdaughter actually. She's 16 now. Well, she's in Sydney, so I haven't been living with her for the last few years, but I did up until, I don't know, 13 or something. But, yeah, 12 was the big whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, what's
See,
going on
See, 14 for
here?
Boys, yeah. 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 And that's, yeah, you're right, it's whoa.
Whoa! If you're listening to this, Annabelle, which you wouldn't because it would be too long. It wouldn't matter. Like, okay, I'll listen to that maybe in about 20 years.
Your stepmom still loves you.
Yeah, I do.
I love my son too. I'm about to go through it again because I've got my middle son's about to turn 13. So, yeah, and he's going to go through all that hormonal stuff again.
Do they often boys go quite inward, don't they?
Yeah.
Did that happen?
My 14-year-old got more angry, which surprised me because he's usually so placid and calm. And he was great. He actually verbalised it to me and he said, Mum, you need to understand I'm going through some hormonal changes. And I was like,
he's like, I've Googled
right,
it.
Right. I've got it, mate. I'll learn. I'll try better, you know.
It's hard, isn't it? Like, just to – I mean, my daughter does it to me now and I just go, oh, that's like a little glimpse of what's coming in the future, just when she gets really annoyed or mad at me and she'll just go, or something. I'm like, okay.
And, you know, the funny thing is we went through it, but I don't remember being – I remember fighting with my parents a lot.
I remember fighting with my mum.
But I still in my head blame them for that.
I know. Like,
I'm sure it wasn't them now. I'm pretty sure it was
me. Let me stay in my room, okay? I'm happy there.
Yeah. I'm going to just listen to my cassettes and I'll be happy.
Well, I went to boarding school. So
oh, did you?
It's the perfect solution.
Oh, which boarding school did you go to?
Oh, I went to Penrose just for year 11 and 12.
Yeah.
So I was at Bruce Rock till year 10 and then I did the last 2 years boarding school and I loved it because it just – you know, and sometimes when I hear, like, what my stepdaughter's, you know, this or that, then I thought, you know what? Like, I had freedom by 15.
Cause, yeah.
You know, I probably shouldn't say this. I don't know. tarnishing the school's reputation. I think it's got a lot more strict after we left because I just signed out with my brother on the weekends and we just did whatever we wanted. Like, we were free and it was the best ever.
Yeah.
And then
What's the age gaps between you and your brother then?
4.5 years.
Oh, wow. He was a cool brother coming to get you.
Oh, yeah. No, but he just lived across the road. But I didn't see him. Like, I just stayed with my friends. And do you know what I mean?
It was even more cool then.
Well, yeah. I would tell my parents that I was going to a party, but I don't think they understood what parties meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they were very different back then. We didn't have, like, Facebook or social medias that meant heaps of people came. That was up to us to flyer.
Yeah, we had to flyer. We did go to this massive party once and I was just like, yeah, I don't know how the word got out there. But
flyering.
Flyering, yeah. Which is so cool, don't you reckon? Like, it was just
cool.
And we used to write notes to each other, to your friends in class, because you wouldn't be texting.
Yeah.
You'd write there and then you'd fold them in this really special way. Did you used to do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And have the little bit
and
on the
side. And it was awesome because you'd find them years later, reread them and go, whoa.
I know. Yeah. I just remember being so in love with my friends back then. Like, your friends were everything at that age.
Yeah.
Just couldn't imagine.
I'm sure it's the same for teenagers now.
I think that is the same. It's just the phone is just constant. Yeah. I don't envy that.
I mean, my kids don't have phones.
And what age are they?
14, nearly 13 and 9.
Yeah, because my daughter asked me when she can have one and I say, when you're 16.
Yeah,
Is that what you're
going
to do?
Yeah, yeah.
How are you managing to do that though? Do they feel like they're missing out?
Yeah, they'll get over it.
On like the Instagram party, like, you know, just being told.
Maybe, but they're boys, so they're a bit more into the gaming stuff. So they do have, you know, a gaming sort of console thing. And you can tell I'm really not into it. So
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just, you know, I want them to be able to make eye contact with people and to have a conversation, you know, and have something that's meaningful. So they can call their friends still.
I'm going to get my daughter one of those Nokia 10s. Were they the Nokia 10s?
Yeah.
Like, you can call.
Yeah, which would be amazing. So I'd be open to that more.
Oh, yeah, because I think have a phone, so if you need me or whatever, call me. But
again, I like kids to be able to troubleshoot and problem solve because someone said to me once, you know, what if they miss a bus? And I'm like, they get the next one or they walk home. That's what I used to have to do.
Yeah.
It's not a biggie. Like,
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
You just learn, don't you, though?
Yeah. I just, because you see all the kids walking around these days. Sound like a big grandma, don't we? But they're just walking along. Like, we just, we're driving and this girl was pulling the wheelie bin out. I guess it's good she's doing chores and everything. But, like, and looking at her phone at the same time. And I thought, that's how crazy it is now. Like, to escape the mundaneness of pulling a wheelie bin just down your driveway. You're like, no, I've got to make that more exciting. So I'll take my phone with me and stare at it. But I think we're supposed to be bored.
Yes.
Like, that's where all the cool ideas come from. That's
absolutely
where all the cool games at school came from, when you were bored and you all had to wait and sit around for whatever reason. Then you'd think of these really weird games.
Yeah.
And they were really fun. Like, well, if you don't have that, you don't ever find those cool things.
I think it's Sean Tan that has the creative process for when he's most creative, and his creative ideas come from when he's washing dishes.
Yeah.
We need to learn to be okay with boredom. But also, I worry about the social loss of engagement in that, because if someone walks past, what if someone special walks past and they miss that opportunity to have that eye contact and that moment of, oh, somehow energetically I like you and I want to say hello to you and get to know you. But if your face is in a phone all the time, it's
all
very Wally.
You've got is Tinder.
Yes.
And that's so sad.
It's
very
sad.
I don't know, because I never did Tinder, and I'm sure I would do Tinder if, you know.
You're not missing out on anything, okay?
Oh, have you done that?
Yeah, Tinder? I have done Tinder.
Tell me. I want to know. I have to live vicariously.
I'm seeing someone that I met from Bumble. So,
How is Bumble different from Tinder?
With Bumble, you have to, as a female, you have to send.
You're the initiator?
Yes, you send the message. But I get really bored with dating platforms very fast, actually. I find it very superficial, I get very, very bored. So I'm lucky sometimes if I stay on there for 24 hours, because I feel like it's Tetris, and sometimes I want to play Tetris. So I'm like, yeah, swipe, 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 swipe. It's boring.
It's a bit like scrolling Facebook, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement. I think it attracts a lot of men and less females, which I find very interesting. So,
well, because men are, well, I could get in trouble saying this as well, but
visual.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they are.
And it's not to say I don't like looking at a hot guy. but I think I was thinking about this not long ago. Like, remember when you used to have in the paper, like, what were those ads?
Seeking. Yeah, seeking someone.
And
yeah,
what the women would always put, because I remember as a kid looking at them going, what was that? S-O-H mean, which was sense of humour, I think.
Yeah.
S-O, must have great S-O-H. and it was always on the women's thing for men. Like, cause
I don't know if people write that anymore. I think they now write, you know, must not smoke, must not be a druggie.
Oh, it's got like that out there, has it? It's just like, I don't care if you're boring and you can't make me laugh, as long as you're not going to ruin my life by gambling all my money away and smoking cigarettes, then you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think a sense of humour was always, you know, important.
Yeah, definitely.
For women in
confidence
men.
As well. Women love confidence.
But I don't know that the men would care whether the back to that year nine thing. I don't think they really care if the girl's making you laugh or not, as long as you look good. I don't know. That's a generalisation. Obviously, I laugh with my husband and I make him laugh.
Yeah. The problem that I have with online dating is you don't actually know what you're attracted to until you have someone in front of you, and then you can feel that chemistry. And so if you're saying no to heaps of people, but if you met them in person, you might actually be attracted to them.
I agree.
And I think people are missing out on that and then
also
choosing the wrong people.
I definitely was someone that could not be attracted to someone in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then if you're hanging out with them in a work situation or just for whatever reason you hang out a lot, they become more attractive.
Yeah. I think I work the same because the guy that I'm with, he's absolutely lovely, but I had – I
said, "Is he going to listen to this?"
Probably. Hi, Steve. His name's Steve.
Hi, Steve. She thinks you're hot now. Your hotness has grown on her. No kidding.
He's not. No, it wasn't a looks thing. It was. I'm very guarded, so for me and him, I had this thing in my head. Like, it was during COVID. I got on online dating. I was like, crap, maybe I want to explore this more. And everyone must be on online dating now because none of us are allowed out. We're in lockdown, and so I told Steve, "Oh, look, I'm getting off," and he said, "Oh, look, can I grab your phone number? I'll do it old school wise." And I went, "Yeah, sure." Beautiful Scottish accent, so you know his voice, won me over.
Yeah.
But I needed everything to go slow. I wanted to fall in love with him as a person and his personality, and I'm really grateful he allowed that time and space for me to get to know him, because I had issues that I had to work through. So.
And how did you do that in isolation?
Just talking on the phone. But then we did meet, and then I still made things go very, very slow.
I read that in an article that people were getting to know each other more than they normally would because they couldn't just hook up or whatever. And so they had to find out more about each other, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm really grateful that he actually took the time to say, "Look, let's chat on the phone," because I get so bored with the messaging.
I can't deal with it.
No. And I don't want to deal with it either.
I'm happy with to talk on the phone and have a conversation. But, you know, like the whole WhatsApp thing and people have group chats and I just like –
You come back to it, you've missed 80 messages.
I can't do it. I'm like on – like in Bruce Rock because I play hockey, they have like the hockey WhatsApp and whatever. And I'm always like, oh, we were supposed to bring a cake today, were we? Because I don't leave my notifications on because I can't deal with it.
No, it's too much.
No.
It causes a lot more stress, doesn't it?
When you it causes a lot of stress for me because I think, oh, I'm really popular. And I'm like, no, I'm not. It's just the group messaging for WhatsApp.
Yeah.
It's not actually personal text to me. So I don't care.
Yeah, move on.
Yeah. If you don't want me personally, I feel very unloved and I'm not going to respond. Yeah.
Can you share a story of a time when you were pleasantly surprised by an unforeseen change?
An unforeseen change, like the wind or something.
Yeah, well, you moved from Perth to Sydney. That was a big one, but yeah.
Pleasantly surprised. I think childbirth, bizarrely.
Okay.
I was pleasantly surprised because I just sort of thought, oh, now I'll have a baby, I guess. Like, it wasn't someone that was like, yeah, I can't wait to have a baby, or someone that really, you know, wanted to do that. I just decided to do it for a life experience. That sounds probably really superficial. Well, not superficial, not really. Selfish or something. But in a sense, I think having kids is selfish. Like, in there's an element of, you know.
But I think it teaches you to be selfless, you know. You become so well-rounded.
Yeah, and I think like one of my best friends had a baby 3 weeks before me, and she was like, oh my God, Ellie, you are going to love it so much. And I was like, of course I'll love my baby, yeah. Like thinking, oh my God, like have to, you know, it's the baby spam that you see everyone do and you're like, oh, what is wrong with them? And yeah, I don't know, the second I had her, the maternal thing kicked in and I was surprised.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it. I thought, yeah, sure. Intellectually, I thought, yeah, I'll love this kid. Yeah. But I was surprised at the powerful thing that it is.
I can't even describe it if people haven't experienced it. It is an absolutely beautiful experience, isn't it?
It is. And in saying that, like, I know obviously there's plenty of people that can't experience that, and I also don't think it's the be-all and end-all either.
No.
And I think hormones massively are involved.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you first have them, because I don't walk around like I love my little girl, but I, you know, that kind of toxic, like intoxicating love that I think is there from the oxytocin that is pumping around your body. And obviously that doesn't happen to everyone either. Like people suffer postnatal and there's all sorts, like everyone's got a different ride. And that was just mine. But, you know, I think – do you experience this as time goes on, the mundaneness of parenthood is – more like I'm not floating around with oxytocin now, like I totally love my child still, but I think that thing that happens you know, when they pop out and you're like, and I had a cesarean, so I didn't
I had a cesarean too, so that's really, yeah, I was gonna ask you, did you manage to do natural or cesarean?
I tried,
it does
to
change.
Do natural,
yeah,
because my daughter was breech, and
I had a breech baby too.
Oh, really? was that your first?
Yeah,
and there was a doctor in the hospital I was going to have her in Sydney that said, he specialised in breech births.
Oh,
naturally.
Were you at what was it called? Because my oldest was born in Sydney as well.
Royal Women's.
Yes.
In Randwick?
Yes.
So we had your bum.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I loved it.
And I went to breech clinic. Is that what you went to?
Oh, with Dr. Bissett.
I think so. He was amazing.
Amazing.
And he tried to do an ECV.
When they give you Ventolin.
Yeah.
IV. Oh, my God. I was so spaced out with it. Did I?
Yes. It was a terrible feeling, and it hurt like crazy.
Well, I don't remember it hurting. I just remember because my husband has asthma and he hates taking Ventolin because he says it, you know. And I was always like, what is he complaining about? There's so many people take Ventolin and like, what's your deal? Typical nurse, no sympathy, kind of just get over it, okay? And then when I had the IV Ventolin, I was like, it just speeds everything up.
Oh, yeah. I've got asthma. It's not like that.
Oh. So I actually have a right to be annoyed at him?
No, I'd say he's probably taking too much Ventolin.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you take too much, that will, yeah.
And I think that was more when he wasn't on his preventive. He's just like.
Yeah, Nicholas, get on those preventers, mate.
Now, he never takes Ventolin hardly at all now. But
yeah, same, because I'm on good preventers. Yeah. But That IV, you that was huge doses, and it was a weird feeling,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was very strange.
My ECV failed, so I
mine.
Yeah, so I
it
got
was
into
too late, they reckon.
Like, yeah, or I got onto an early intervention one. So, because I was trying to go through the birth clinic, and then they found that it was my oldest. He was breech. So I basically had to go through they said, oh, look, we'll send you to breech clinic. And they were doing a trial to see if early intervention of ECVs at that stage would help the
turn
baby.
Yeah.
But he was actually bum engaged. And so it just failed. So that was okay. And then I ended up and my fluid level was low and everything. So he ended up being born 3.5 weeks early. I left work that Friday, meaning I was meant to work another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then by the next, I think it was the Tuesday night, I actually, my waters broke and I went into labour. And he was born on International Quit Smoking Day, and his dad was a smoker. And I went, well, this is a sign, mate, quit smoking.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
So it was quite funny. But I ended up with a semi-emergency cesarean because of that. Instead of having that doctor who...
Dr. Bissett.
Yes. Instead of having him, I ended up with a rush cesarean, and they were coming off shift, and it was just messy scarring. And and then I had allergic reaction to the morphine, so I ended up spending the whole day vomiting from it. So it was horrific. Yeah.
No.
And yeah, so anyway,
yeah, no, see, mine was kind of the opposite, because I remember actually my friend is an acupuncturist, and she
I did think.
Did you do the moxicillin?
Yes.
That is so funny.
And yoga.
Yeah. But I think mine was like they picked her up being breached quite late.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I went to my friend and she did the moxa sticks, which is like what? It's like charcoal.
It smells like
pot,
okay?
No,
I used to think my neighbours in my apartment thought this heavily pregnant woman was smoking pot in the balcony.
Yeah. Well, because
and it wasn't.
They burn it on your feet, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
On my little toe.
Yes.
I used to hold it there.
Oh, it was a little toe. Yeah. I remember. Yeah. And so she did that. And she goes, you can take it home with you if you like and just keep doing it.
Yeah.
So that night, I remember that. Was it that? That night, I was just like putting this moxa stick, just like burning it onto my toe or whatever you do. And then the next day, it was like probably my worst day of being pregnant. Like I just felt really disgusting. I was taking my stepdaughter to her piano classes and then I was like, shit, I need to go to the toilet. And I had to walk, like, because Sydney parking, I was like, I can't get in my car and drive. It was in Bondi. I didn't have to drive that far, but I knew I probably wouldn't get a park.
Yeah.
So I was just better off walking down to the main drag. I was just wobbling down, bit of wee coming down my leg.
Oh,
and
you
just,
poor thing.
Yeah, you know, at that stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my waters broke that night.
Oh, my
you
God.
You know, like, and I look back, I just go, yep, it was just everything was like, we have to get out. But I reckon it was the moxa stick.
Wow.
Because she was a week early and I'd just, like, gone hardcore on the moxa stick.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
There
and
you then, go. I can't believe we did similar things to try to get these babies to turn. Yeah. And I did yoga, so I was doing an upside down inversion. Heavily pregnant. This baby was stuck. He was not going to pop down and out.
Yeah, it's like, my bums, I'm ready. I'm ready to come up. Yeah. Well, yeah, I ended up waters breaking, had to go in at 2 a.m. to the hospital because they said Cushy's breech.
Yep.
And it's just that thing about childbirth, how I think you imagine how it's going to be versus what it
the
actually
reality.
Is.
Yeah.
And so we had my stepdaughter with us, and so my husband couldn't come with me because it's 2 a.m. and she's sleeping.
Yeah.
So it was really weird just being in a taxi at 2 a.m. going, well, I hope its heart's beating, and, you know, just rocking up by yourself, which is not a big deal at all. I think we are schooled to think, you've got to have your guy there and, you know, you do it together. You know what happened when my husband came? So he didn't come to the hospital till 3 p.m. the next, like, afternoon because I didn't have contractions until, like, around that time.
Yeah.
And anyway, they'd put me in a room and they'd put a night, you know, like those gym mats.
Yeah.
I had a gym mat on the floor and he walks in and goes, oh, great, this is for me, isn't it? And just laid down on it. I was like, no, it's for me. I'm having the baby. You know?
That was hilarious.
I know. I was just like, unbelievable. And then he's claustrophobic.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just him being in a room for like a day is his worst nightmare. And basically, you know, I didn't dilate beyond 6 centimetres. This is lovely for all the viewers listening. And so then they were like, nah, like after about 2 days of just...
Were they going to allow you to have a breech baby then?
Yeah, because I was with this particular doctor that specialised in it.
Okay.
But in saying that, another doctor came in the morning, just the normal ward doctor. And because I'm a nurse, I understand politics in hospital.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're having a natural birth, are you, with this? And she just scolded me.
Oh.
And I was like, the worst thing to someone who's, having their first baby and just has made a decision.
Yes.
But then anyway, I ended up having cesarean anyway because it had gone so long. But I went from having no drugs to a spinal, and so I was off my face. I was cracking jokes on the operating board, and then I was like, don't make the surgeon laugh right now. That's probably not a good thing.
Oh, I know. Well, I was trying to do small talk with the surgeon.
Oh, were you?
She was, yeah.
Small talk, that is hilarious. Yeah, yeah.
Because I get very anxious with surgeries, but I mustn't have had the same doctor. I think his name was Alex, who did mine, but he had said to me, you're going to have a cesarean. So I freak out over surgeries, and even in our birthing clinic thing that we did at the hospital, I was like, I don't need to see the needles, just pass them on. I hate all that. I'm going to do natural. My mum's done natural. My sister's done natural. So I was freaking out, and the way that when I freak out, I just banter and joke a lot. And so, but it was quite funny, you know, because I think I was quite a private person, and they had a full staff change during my surgery. So all the nieces left, all the nurses left. The only one that was left was my actual surgeon. And I'm like, wow, this is everyone's seen everything now.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, this is the other thing. Like, speaking of that, you know how we're talking about some of the material that I do about the old hair downstairs, or the lack of, or not lack of, in my case. Everybody wants to know that. Because I don't do anything. But my husband's 20 years older than me, so as if he's going to care. Do you know what I mean? Like, I said to him a little while ago, do you reckon if I went on the dating scene now, I'd have to, you know, I'd feel compelled to do a bit of work down there, or I'd just be like, no, someone's going to love me for how I am.
I think it's each their own, Ellie. Like,
well, I don't know, but out on the dating scene now, maybe Steve, he's cool, is he? Or,
well, I'm bald, so.
Well, that's what I mean.
But that was my choice, not, and I did that as a rebellious divorce thing. I didn't want a tattoo.
Oh, you weren't bald to your ex. Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You were like, I'm treating.
I actually did a lot of research. And I wanted to do something rebellious, but tattoo wasn't quite me. So
no, because, it depends if you've gone laser or not.
I'm laser.
Oh, I was going to say, because you can't reverse tattoo. I mean, you can, but does that mean bald forever?
Well, I don't know. Maybe, I think you have to go maintenance. I don't know.
You must have really related to my material if you remember.
I thought it was funny, yeah. It was hell funny.
But the thing is, when I did that material in Frio, this girl came up to me and she goes, I'm a nurse, and in the last 10 years I've only seen 2 hairy.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, probably I was one of them. Probably I was one of them. If she was in Sydney. But it made me go, wow, because as a nurse, I haven't worked in hospital since 2005. So if we're going back to there, I saw them all the time. I saw one lady's, it was so thick, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, are you fertilizing that? Like, what is going on there? But hey, you go and you do you.
Yeah.
But now, it's within the space of, I don't know, how many years is that? 15. It sounds like, obviously, the women having babies now, it's like, if I was to have a baby now, I would be scaring the doctors.
Probably not. I'm sure they're okay with it. But for me, when it's, you know, that time
scaring
of month.
The
yeah, they might not.
They'll be like, what is that? What is that animal?
Does that thing crawl away? Yeah, so I was going to be totally inappropriate then.
I'm probably
going to
regret that I've taken the conversation this
way. No, it's good. I did stand up for 5 times to experience what it was like for you guys. One of my first sets was about pubic hair and my journey of getting rid of it.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people sort of see me as a bit of an expert on pubic hair.
Yeah.
And so one of them come to me and said, you know, you know, why won't guys go down on me? And I was like, well, what's it like down there? And she's like, well, you know, yeah, you know, it's a full head. I went, well, you know, nobody wants to be flossing on your pubes. So
yeah, but then I don't care if I floss on my partners. Like, I'm like, there's no, I don't care.
It's each their own,
flossing.
Right? But what happened in that set was I realized that I could feel the audience, and I had half the audience with me, the other half wasn't. And I was like, right,
was
I need to
age
just.
Thing?
Maybe, but I just thought, okay, I've got to shelve that, and it's got to be in context. And if I want to re-go through that process of that journey that I went through, I need to, you know, write it a bit better and get it there, you know,
no,
make
but
it
I
more
think
relevant.
It's good that we like have these conversations. Like, I stopped shaving my legs when I was.
You don't look like you've got any hair.
I know. I can't say, like, look, if I was a lot more of a naturally hairy person, maybe I would feel like I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's such a full-on cultural, like, as women,
yeah,
we feel like we can't be hairy, don't you reckon?
Yeah. Oh, again, each their own. Yeah.
No, but how many women do you see with hairy armpits? Like, when you see it, it's
probably
a bit like,
less.
Whoa.
Less than, yeah. Whoa. Less than probably shaved, but
oh, there's definitely,
yeah. But for me, I don't like the sweat, that's why I shave. And yeah.
Well, I sweat with or without.
Okay,
yeah.
Oh, you still do? I do now since 40.
Oh, but is that what's happened to me?
Yes, yeah, it's fun, right?
Yeah, but you know, the reason why I stopped shaving my legs is because I saw my little girl when she was 3 with her legs next to me, and then I was like, oh, I wonder when she's going to notice that she has hairy legs and I don't.
Oh.
And then I was like,
wow, what a way to do it, yeah.
Well, I was like, how am I going to explain that, yeah, I shave my legs because it's expected of women? And yeah, then I was like, well, I don't want to have to explain it to her. She will be embarrassed that her mum has hairy legs now and sometimes hairy armpits. Like, you know, but it's simply because I want to challenge my own. Like, I look at my hairy legs and go, yeah, they still look pretty ugly. Do you know what I mean? Because
I can't see hairs on your legs, but are they blonde?
It's just my shins. I've only got hair on my shins. Isn't that weird? Like, literally, I've got no hair there.
You're very lucky.
And I know. So I don't think it's a fair experiment, really. Do you know what I mean? It's an easy experiment for me. Anyway, these are the things that.
But I like that you're giving your daughter head. That opportunity as well to
choice.
Yeah,
it's
choice.
It's all about choice.
It is, and that's fantastic that she's going to have that choice and, yeah, be free to, you know,
be free to go, Mum, you're so embarrassing. I do not want to be like you. I think she's asked me already. Like, no, she's asked me, why do you have hair on under your arm?
Ah, yeah.
Because I will grow my hair under my arm.
Yeah,
but she would never have asked me that if I'd always shaved them.
Yeah.
Like, she wouldn't know that women grow hair there.
Yeah.
Until she get a nasty fright at about, I don't know, what age do we grow hair under our arms?
Well, it depends on when she's going to go through puberty. Anytime, yeah, from 8, she could start going through puberty. Yeah, I hope she's not that young because that's too young, I think. You know.
She has already asked me if she'll have big boobs or not. I'm like, I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Whatever. It's fine.
Ali, can you tell everyone where they can find you on social medias?
Yes. You can find me on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Ali Butler. Ali's got two L's. Ali Butler. I have a website, alibutler.com. Not that I do much with it. Instagram, Alibella. Yep. I am more of a Facebook person than Instagram. I try and do Instagram, but
yeah, you know that's our age group, right?
I know, that's what I mean. And it's that, like, people, like my stepdaughter, they're like, Facebook is so boring and everything. I just can't get Instagram. Like, it's totally, I'm just revealing.
You would
my
be
age.
Great at Instagram, but because
people
even
say that to me, but I've would. Tried. I find it boring. I actually find it boring.
Yeah,
just looking at people's photos
because it is a visual thing. That's the thing. So, but your poster for 40 Year Pop Star was beautiful. The photos in that. So just imagine that on Instagram, and, you know, go from there.
I know, but it's like what you have to do to create all of it. It's the actual – I'm not quick with the whole just upload a photo and do a little crop and do a little filter and bam, that all takes me about an hour. I'm not joking. So I'm just like, oh, my God. Anyway, but you can find me on Instagram and, look, people say start TikTok and I'm like, another one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's LinkedIn as well. You know.
I know. Sometimes I put stuff on my LinkedIn and one person will react. I'm like, is it worth it?
Is it worth it? I hear you.
Or come to Bruce Rock and I'll have a scone with me. Like, seriously,
that would be amazing,
me,
wouldn't it?
Because the town's small.
If people, yeah, you could ask, couldn't you? The local convenience
Where's
store.
Where's Ali?
Yep. And people would point you in, them in the right direction.
Actually, someone did that once.
Did they?
Well, they sent – I met them.
Yeah. She doesn't want any stalkers, guys.
I met them at a grocery store up in the town up the road, and I was – before I just had a gig – a 40-year-old pop star gig. Mm. And I was just being my really friendly self and like, hi, oh, you're new in town, blah, blah, blah. It's a thing when people take a friendly conversation. Anyway, he tried to send me flowers and...
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I don't know. And not that I want to say anything against that person, but I was just like, oh. And I think he asked for my address and luckily the post office didn't give it out. So you may not be able to find my house.
Yes.
But I will come and meet you at the coffee shop and we can order scones together.
Yeah, let's play that safe, I think,
yeah,
as well. Ali, do you have a joke that you could share with everyone?
A joke? Oh, well, this is, I guess, one of my lines. I'm not much of a joke teller, like, as far as, you know, knock, knock, who's there? Oh, I could, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Wilitzer.
Wilitzer who?
Well, it's a one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, yeah, go, man, go.
That's great.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is actually our last show for the year. So I want to say Merry Christmas to you and Happy New Year.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you, Yvonne.
Thank you.
What are you doing for New Year's? Anything? Hanging out with Steve?
Oh, no, I'll have my kids. We're going to our local park and they'll have a New Year's celebration because where I live in Kalamunda, it's quite community based as well, and so all the community go to a local park and we we're there together. It's really nice. So yeah, the kids will all be there and their friends, and yeah, so it'll be lovely. So
yeah, good.
We'll celebrate that way.
Nice.
Yeah, so Merry Christmas everyone and Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2021. And Ali, thank you so much for joining us today. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you've been listening to Bounce Back.